The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes. The families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A mass shooting in a wealthy suburb of Chicago left 7 dead and at least 30 injured on Monday. According to police, 21-year-old suspect Robert Cremo allegedly opened fire on the Highland Park 4th of July parade, firing off 70 rounds from an AR-15 rifle while disguised as a woman. We'll have the latest on the shooting and the reaction on tonight's Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. Another weekend of horrific violence across the country. Many shooting incidents in major cities, but notably this mass shooting event that occurred just about 20 miles north of the city of Chicago. It was an individual targeted a 4th of July parade, shooting everybody in sight, the elderly, children, an act of horrific mass murder that just seems incomprehensible to anyone who is not a complete and utter psychopath, as this individual clearly is. And now we know more details about this. Lake County Police spokesman Chris Covelli today addressed this and said that the shooter, Robert Cremo, planned the shooting in advance.
We do believe Cremo pre-planned this attack for several weeks. He brought a high-powered rifle to this parade. He accessed the roof of a business via a fire escape ladder and began opening fire on the innocent Independence Day celebration goers.
It's a horrific event. And there is the shooter who everyone who sees his photos, which are now all over the internet, along with his videos, he had some kind of a rap channel that he set up on YouTube that was taken down. There's a lot of this guy's content online. I mean, he looks crazy to most folks. I mean, he looks like somebody who is deranged. You can see it in his eyes, the face and neck tattoos. It looks like somebody who, if a red flag law won't stop him, who will? Which Illinois has red flag law in place, by the way.
Who does a red flag law stop? You start to wonder about this, if it won't stop an individual like this. And so then is it the takeaway that a red flag law wouldn't even be or isn't even effective despite all the conversation recently about them? This is an instance of mental health breakdown for this individual. Obviously, he's crazy. And it's also a case where someone is evil. But immediately, anytime there's a shooting like this, there is an effort to politicize it and make it all about gun control. Here is the mayor of Highland Park, Illinois, doing just that.
My recollection of him was as a sweet little boy. I'm sorry that we're glorifying what he put on social media. I don't want to encourage other people to think that this is a way to, lead into this kind of violence. We need to have a very real national conversation about why we're okay with allowing weapons of war on our streets and why we're okay with weekly having mass shootings.
Okay, what is that conversation supposed to be? We hear about this all the time. What is the conversation? There are tens of millions of AR-15 style rifles already in circulation, tens of millions in this country right now. There are literally millions of people who own them and who never break any law and pose no threat to anyone except perhaps a tyrannical government or a home invasion criminal. So what is the national conversation supposed to be exactly? Well, they never say. This is just about poking and prodding their political opponents and using this moment of tragedy and emotional upheaval to achieve that. And then that brings me to the governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, who honestly strikes me as a total imbecile on the issue of guns and perhaps far more than just that. I don't care that he's very wealthy. I don't care that he's the governor of Illinois. He's a jackass. And here he is saying that, this is, of all the arguments you hear around the Second Amendment and guns and gun violence, it only protects muskets is probably for the dumbest people. That's the one where you say this argument is so obviously absurd and stupid, so intellectually subpar. How could anyone make it with a straight face? Well, here's the governor of Illinois saying the founders thought, you wouldn't have had an assault weapon, maybe a musket. Watch.
Our founders carried muskets, not assault weapons. And I don't think a single one of them would have said that you have a constitutional right to an assault weapon with a high-capacity magazine.
Supreme Court's already dealt with this. This has already been addressed by the highest court in the land, and it does make you sit here and say to yourself, what are the British Redcoats? We just had Independence Day weekend. What do the British Redcoats carry? Oh, yeah, muskets. So they were carrying the same thing that the colonists were able to carry so that they could actually meet them on a battlefield and be a weapon against tyranny. Oh, right. So weapons in common usage. The Supreme Court's already looked at this. And for anyone who needs a little more assistance on the constitutional interpretation side of it, yeah, they didn't know that assault rifles would exist in 1776. They also didn't know the internet would exist. So does free speech not include the internet? You utter moron, Governor Pritzker. But yeah, it's hard to believe he's actually that dumb. It feels like maybe he's just playing some kind of a political game here and playing to his base. Because what he definitely doesn't want is for people to look at the largest city in his state, Chicago. While there was this horrific seven fatality mass murder over the weekend from this clearly deranged little psychopath who's now in custody and facing charges, put him in prison the rest of his life. If you believe in the death penalty, he should definitely get the death penalty. And yet in Chicago, there were 71 other shootings over the weekend. 71 people shot. 8 were killed. Now, this is almost all handgun violence, by the way. This is all with handguns. So all the talk about assault rifles would do nothing to stop this. And this is just what is now considered somehow the new horrific normal in a city like Chicago, that over a holiday weekend in the summer, you're going to have not even just a few dozen, 71 people shot, 8 people killed in one weekend in one city. It's a lot of shootings. It's a lot of people getting bullets put in them by criminals. A lot of murderers running around in the city of Chicago. What is the governor doing? What's the mayor, Lori Lightfoot, doing? Obviously nothing. Complaining about white supremacy, talking about the insurrection, something like that, Not actually handling the outrageous surge of criminality that continues to rip through Chicago and a number of other cities. But Chicago is really, for a large city, in a class by itself. And the violence that occurs there is occurring in what is effectively the most restrictive gun law city in the country. In Chicago, D.C., maybe New York. So what exactly are they achieving by lecturing us on a national conversation about firearms that focuses on assault rifles and says we can only have muskets when there are gangbangers killing dozens and dozens of people every weekend with handguns in their main city, run entirely by Democrats? They have no answer. They just want to talk more about the insurrection. We'll have more on this with retired FBI agent James Gagliano in a moment. First, I want to talk to you about protecting your online data. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed, but that's just not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data and never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone else with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com. And use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line.
There was no signs of trouble. I saw no signs of trouble. And if I did see signs, I would have said something. But there was no signs of trouble.
That was Paul Crimo, the uncle of the alleged Highland Park gunman, telling local media that he saw no warning signs from his nephew, the alleged mass murderer from the 4th of July parade shooting over the weekend. Police allege that his nephew, Robert Crimo, as we said, had been planning the shooting for weeks in advance that left seven dead. They have yet to uncover or discuss a motive publicly. Joining me now to give his insights into yesterday's shooting, retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent James Gagliano. James, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Buck.
So, it's tough, right? We sit here, again, another discussion about a vicious mass murder, shooting of innocent people. And there's a lot of, we'll take a step away from the partisan finger-pointing that happens right away. The mental health side of this, I think that's one place where both sides can agree there's clearly a problem, right? That these individuals, I mean, this guy's a psychopath. You don't have to have a degree in psychiatry to know that. How do you catch this stuff, James? I mean, I'm seeing some of your former colleagues from the FBI who are profilers going on TV to talk about it. Is that something that might be applicable, useful in advance of these incidents? How does that all work?
I mean, Buck, we've talked in the wake of a number of mass shootings like this, and it's a complex issue, as you know. There exists no panacea. I mean, there's no profiler in the world that's going to get these things right every time. And I think you alluded to it at the top. Evil exists. You want to tie it into mental health? Of course. You want to tie it into a proliferation of weapons? Okay. But there's not one set thing that we could do to stop this. Now, this guy fit the profile, right? Disaffected or disenfranchised. And I'm not a psychologist or a sociologist either, but I think we can make that leap to say that this was a disenfranchised young man between the ages of 18 and 25. And to your point, they come in all shapes and sizes and colors, and they hew to different ideological ends of the spectrum. So there's not a one-size-fits-all here. But it was a legally obtained weapon, and you had somebody that did clearly have, and again, I'm not trying to diagnose it on your show, but clearly had some type of mental issues. And I've been describing this all day as these people, Buck, are grievance collectors. Something happened. Something triggered it, whether they were an incel or whether they felt like they were marginalized or whether or not they got online in their parents' basement and were radicalized or heard some siren's call, some clarion call to go do something. Now, we know of none of those things right now that exist because police have not released any of it. But if this goes to form, that's what we're going to find. Somebody on the periphery, somebody marginalized, somebody that had been collecting grievances and decided to take it out yesterday in Highland Park, Illinois, and kill. We just now know that there are now 7 people dead and, Buck, over 24 wounded.
James, the state of Illinois, as I understand it, does have red flag laws, right? So this falls under the, okay, we keep hearing, if only we had the following. The state of Illinois has red flag laws. Illinois has a number of measures in place to prevent people from getting firearms, certainly illegally. I believe they have an assault rifle ban, but I might need to check on that one. In the state, I think it's difficult generally. I'm sorry, they don't have an assault rifle ban, but this would fall under a case where the individual was, even with the elevated age that people have talked about recently and the most recent legislation, he was 22, so he wouldn't have been covered in that restriction. So what are we supposed to think would have been, what is the measure other than this guy's crazy, lock him up indefinitely, that law enforcement could take in advance of him actually engaging in this heinous plot?
Sure. And we live in a free and open society, and we don't want to live under martial law. And in order for us to live in a free and open society and cherish our civil liberties, these things are going to happen. And people are going to push back and say, well, you've got to stop it. Well, every time somebody says something hateful and bigoted, you can't lock them up for it. Yes, we know the difference between fomenting and inciting riots or hate speech designed to get people hurt. We understand those differences. But the bottom line is the First Amendment doesn't protect the right to free speech that you and I like, Buck. It protects free speech that we abhor. Now, you mentioned Chicago. This is a city much like the city of New York, which is 60 miles south from where I live. And I spent 25 years there as an FBI agent. Some of the most draconian laws related to weapons, right? Now, this past 4th of July weekend that just concluded, I want to give you some staggering statistics about the city of Chicago, which is only 20 miles away from Highland Park. 71 people were shot this weekend, Buck. 8 were killed. Last year over the 4th of July weekend in Chicago, 100 plus shot, 19 killed. 2020, the height of the pandemic, Buck, in Chicago over 4th of July weekend, 79 shot and 15 killed. So look, that's not a red herring. I'm not trying to, you know, point people in another direction, but it's important we understand when we talk about mass shootings, which are generally described as 3 or more people wounded or killed, these go on in perpetuity. And in big cities, in large cities, they happen multiple times every weekend. That's where we have a proliferation of illegal weapons. Now, I wish I could have, and I know you would have done the same thing, stopped this depraved miscreant, this cretin who perpetrated this awful, awful, heinous crime. But if you're going to live in a city or in a state or in a country that doesn't hew to martial law, Buck, evil exists. We do the best we can to get out in front of it and prevent it, but it's not a perfect, fool-safe system.
Anything that you see here, James, that you think so far, I know we're still getting a lot of details, but law enforcement missed the red flag, missed the indicators here, or is this just too hard to catch in advance based on the info we have so far?
Yeah, we're always going to get that where people are understandably going to push back and go, how come you didn't know this? Or how come you didn't stop this? Or if this person was quote unquote on your radar, how come you didn't take them off the street? Well, we can't arrest people just because we think they might do something. There has to be 2 parts of a crime, right? It has to be the actual act, the actus reus, and then it has to be the mens rea, the thought process to do it. A lot of times you can't head these things off in advance. Buck, I think one thing that strikes me is police are still referring to this person as a person of interest. Now, person of interest is not somebody charged with a crime. This individual, to my knowledge, now it could have happened and they just haven't announced it yet, has not been charged with a crime. So he's considered to be a person of interest. who was possibly involved in a crime. So it's going to be interesting to see as the police are gathering information. They're certainly scrubbing the internet where this individual was involved in tons of disturbing imagery and postings. And they're obviously going to be doing good old-fashioned detective work, talking to people and finding out who this person came in contact with. Did anyone inspire him or direct him to do this hateful act? And if so, was there some type of conspiracy? And roll those people up as well. We'll know more in the next few days, Buck.
James, always appreciate the expertise and the perspective. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
With calls for a stricter gun control likely to increase in the coming weeks, the state of New York has passed a new measure that essentially nullifies the Supreme Court's recent ruling on concealed carry permit. We'll have more on that with senior legal correspondent at The Federalist, Margo Cleveland, coming up. First, let's talk about protecting your most valuable asset, your home. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a recent story about an Arizona real estate agent that found the home she lived in was listed for sale. The problem was she wasn't selling her home. She was the victim of home title fraud, a devastating crime happening all over the country. According to the experts at Home Title Lock, the crime is incredibly profitable and hard to detect. An identity thief simply creates a fake title transfer for your home and refiles as the new owner. Then he can take out loans on your home or sell it. Typical identity theft services don't cover you, and neither does homeowners insurance. Home Title Lock does. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect anyone tampering with your home's title, they help shut it down and help get your home back in your name. Here's what you should do. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and read the testimonials from FBI agents and government officials. Then register your address to see if you're already a victim and don't even know it. And when you protect your home, tell them Buck sent you to get 30 free days of protection. HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line. Two weeks ago, the Supreme Court made it clear that the Constitution guarantees law-abiding citizens the right to keep and bear arms for self-defense, both in their homes and in public. But on Friday, New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed into law new gun control legislation that effectively nullifies the High Court's pro-Second Amendment decision.
The Supreme Court's decisions were certainly setbacks, but we view them as only temporary setbacks because I refuse, as I've said from day one, I refuse to surrender my right as governor to protect New Yorkers from gun violence or any other form of harm. We're not going backwards. They may think they can change our lives with the stroke of a pen, but we have pens too.
I would say that Governor Hochul is rejecting federalism, but she's a moron and doesn't know what federalism is, so there's that. Joining now with reaction, senior legal correspondent at The Federalist, Margo Cleveland. Margo, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first just tell us, I mean, you wrote an in-depth piece about New York's decision to tighten already very strict and unconstitutional, in fact, gun laws. So what have they done? This hasn't gotten a lot of media play yet. What have they done in response?
So, Buck, they passed a law that actually did two very problematic things. First, they put in very specific provisions for someone to apply and obtain a concealed carry permit. And among other things, it required very extensive training, as well as background checks and things along those lines, which is not the problem. The problem is that it also requires the individuals to turn over the names of any social media accounts they've used in the last 3 years. And the problem there is, are they going to be looking at what an individual's speech is to deny them the permit? Now, obviously, when you have people on social media saying, I'm going to kill someone, things along those lines, completely legitimate issues, but not if they're all of a sudden looking at things such as, we're going to fight back, we're not going to let election fraud happen. Is that going to be a basis to exclude it? So that's one part of the opinion that's problematic. It sounds like they are going to be looking at an individual's speech. And we're not talking about violent speech threats, but just speech in general. But the bigger problem is what the statute did. It went through A through sub, I think, T, S or T, of places that it defined as sensitive places.
Can I actually, we have the governor, Margo, saying those sensitive places. I want to have you react to it. Go ahead.
Shots ring out, flags come down, and nothing ever changes. Except here in New York. In New York, we are taking bold, strong action. We're tightening the red flag laws to keep guns away from dangerous people. And we're raising the age of semi-automatic weapons so no 18-year-old can walk in on their birthday and walk out with an AR-15. Those days are over.
Sorry, she actually was going to list the places. That was a different clip. So tell us about the places.
Sure. So the places are so broad, it would have been easier to say where you could carry a weapon, which it sounds like is from your house, walking down the street to your car, because it excludes any places where the public can come together. Could be in a protest. It could be at Times Square. It could be at a gathering to listen to a music festival, a museum. It goes through and details all of these places as sensitive places. And the reason this is key is the Supreme Court made clear the right to keep and bear arms is bearing arms outside the home for self-defense. And the exception in the opinion spoke of sensitive places such as polling places, the legislature, and schools. It didn't expand it beyond that. And in fact, the court said you can't just say some place being populous is enough to make it a sensitive place. So what New York did, and they don't look like they're embarrassed by it, they're actually proud, is that they said, yeah, that's what the court said, but we're going to define sensitive places so broadly that the right to bear arms in self-defense is virtually a nullity.
Yeah, Margot, so how does this work in terms of possible legal challenges? Because it seems like what New York State's response is to a constitutional ruling here is, we're just going to find a way through bureaucratic shenanigans, essentially, to achieve the same result, which is to prevent people from legally being able. I mean, that's clearly what they're trying to do, right? This isn't stopping criminals who are buying guns out of the back of cars illegally because they're buying them illegally. So no, it doesn't make any difference to those people. So for those like me who are residents of New York, by the way, so this is particularly interesting given that I think I'm about to be applying for a concealed carry permit. At what point is it no longer in keeping with the law here, in keeping with the response of the sort of the decision of the Supreme Court? I mean, can they say, yeah, sure, you have a right to conceal carry. It's just going to cost you a $10,000 fee, and you got to wait 5 years. I mean, at some point, is it just obvious that they're refusing to actually obey the Constitution?
So that point's already here. And I would expect either this week or next week, you're going to have what's called a facial challenge to the law. And a facial challenge is where someone sues and says, just the way it's written, it is unconstitutional. And I think you're going to see two arguments there. You're going to see the argument that requiring me to turn over my speech, my social media, especially if it's someone doing it anonymously, violates my First Amendment rights, and you can't force me to give up those rights to exercise my Second Amendment rights.
Right.
And I think that you're also going to have a facial challenge saying, on its face, these sensitive places are not sensitive places. We need the court to declare that, because otherwise I could be subject to a felony, which is what the court says. But you're also going to have as applied challenges. That would be when someone like you goes in and applies, and you're waiting, and they say, oh, no, we need $10,000, and we looked at what you said online, and we don't think you get it because you said maybe something that seemed right-wing. Then you can sue and say, they denied it based on my speech, not based on my moral character, but based on my viewpoint speech, or because it took so long and it cost so much money. Two other things that the Supreme Court talked about in the opinion. They said it's fine to have these permitting schemes. What is not fine, though, is if they have rules that are so stringent that it prevents an ordinary American from exercising the right to bear arms.
Is it possible, Margot? It seems like the game that some of these Democrat governors in places like New York will play now is, all right, they'll just keep on coming up with new unconstitutional restrictions and force it through, force the challenge. I mean, can a governor be held in contempt by a federal court? Like, I just wonder, is there any mechanism here to protect people from just the continued bad faith violation of state law, or a federal law rather, by a state governor?
Not really. That's just the answer. There isn't. And in fact, you make a great point, is what's going to happen is it's going to start with litigation, and it will go up to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals and then up to the Supreme Court if the Second Circuit okays it. Supreme Court might decide, you know what, we're not going to talk about this for a while. It was almost 20 years, or maybe a little over 20 years, since they took their last Second Amendment case. The good thing, at least, with the latest ruling by the Supreme Court was it gave a lot of guidance. And that's why when I did my analysis, I could say, hey, this is what the Supreme Court said, and this is definitely crossing the line when you define sensitive places that broadly. But the short answer is no, that the state legislative branches and the governors, they can pretty much just thumb their nose at the law. And the consequence is just going to be more litigation.
Amazing. Margo, great work on this. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Famed psychologist Jordan Peterson is refusing to back down after being suspended from Twitter for misgendering trans actor Elliot Page. Author and columnist David Marcus joins us to give his take on the controversy when we come back. Twitter is dropping the censorship hammer once again. Latest victim is psychologist Dr. Jordan Peterson, who was recently suspended from the platform for tweeting, "Remember when pride was a sin and Ellen Page just had her breasts removed by a criminal physician?" Now stuck in a battle with Twitter over his suspended account, the only way he's allowed back on the platform is to acknowledge what he tweeted was against the Twitter guidelines. And he says, "No bleepin' way. No bloody way," as Jordan Peterson would say. Joining now to discuss, author and columnist David Marcus. David, what's up, man?
Doing well, Buck. I like when he like curses a little bit too.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know that Canadians say bloody, but apparently Jordan Peterson says it all the time.
He says so hell something a lot. New yeah.
About good. Canada, eh? This is from your piece in the Daily Wire. There are many, myself included, who have sprung themselves from Twitter jail by just deleting the tweet. So the logic here being that Twitter is so clearly and grossly acting in bad faith, choosing only one side to punish. So, yeah, I mean, this is what they do, right? Bend the knee or you're off.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure you're surprised, Buck, to know that I've been suspended from Twitter for maybe intemperate tweets once or twice. And yeah, that's my approach. My attitude is I'll delete the tweet. I'll spend my time in Twitter jail like it's Goodfellas and jump back on the platform because these people clearly aren't acting in good faith. So when I saw the video of Peterson saying he would rather die than do that, I was interested and I thought about it. And I realized it makes perfect sense because this guy's whole philosophy that has really helped millions of people around the world is rooted in the concept of radical truth. That what you say has to be honest, not just for the benefit of the person that you're talking to, although that too, but for your own benefit, right? This is why he won't use people's pronouns, and this is why he will never delete that tweet. And although I don't share his philosophical perspective, I have a hell of a lot of respect for it.
By the way, you mentioned this. He's drawing quite a line in the sand on this one. This is Dr. Jordan Peterson telling everybody over his dead body that tweet gets deleted. Watch.
I've essentially been banned from Twitter as a consequence. I say banned, although technically I have been suspended. But the suspension will not be lifted unless I delete the hateful tweet in question, and I would rather die than do that. And hopefully it will not come to that, although who the hell knows in these increasingly strange days.
Indeed, who the hell knows? It feels like it does keep getting crazier. I think there was a little bit of a moment here where Elon Musk, it seemed, put a little bit of fear into the Twitterati, but they are back at their old games, it seems. I mean, there's Elon. I'm still hoping he buys Twitter and manages to turn it into a platform for the free exchange of ideas. But one thing I found fascinating about the Jordan Peterson situation here is it's not even clear to me What, like, was this a dead naming issue? Like, what, like, even in the crazy rules that Twitter uses, I was sitting there saying, wait, why was he suspended for this one? Like, I've said worse stuff than that on Twitter, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have no idea. One of my Twitter suspensions was, it was right after Trump took out Soleimani, and there was all this talk about, oh no, the Iranians are going to attack New York. And I tweeted something to the effect of, if they touch New York, we'll turn it into a parking lot. And I was suspended, I guess, for insulting the nation of Iran. I don't know, Buck. These aren't rules, right? There's no rules. There's just angry 20-somethings with colorful hair and pronouns in their bios who want to control your life. I mean, that's all there is. That's the entire moderation process. That's why Donald Trump can't have a Twitter account and the Ayatollah can. I mean, you try to figure it out, because I can't.
You know, Jordan Peterson put out a statement on the suspension as well. He said, this is about the rules issue. There are no rules on Twitter except don't do what we don't like today. They are always applied post hoc by algorithms and idiots bent on maintaining their woke superiority. I just think it is worth everyone noting, because so much of now our communication, but really also national perception, at least in the news world and news cycles, is driven by these social media platforms, that they did used to claim for years that there was no ideological bias. It was just algorithms, man. It's just the machines that you can't even see with all the fancy numbers that were doing this. And it wasn't like they were going after conservatives. And we were crazy for saying they were targeting us. I remember this, 2014, 2015. If you said it, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Now they just straight up tell you, yeah, that's right. Bend the knee or else, peasant.
No, I think that's right. And a big problem with this, larger than just the Peterson situation or the trans issue. I mean, you go back to COVID and you look at everything that was censored and deleted and taken offline, not just by social media, but by our news media. We unfortunately at this point have a historical record of the period of 2020 and 2021 that is utterly biased, utterly incomplete, often completely inaccurate. And 20 years from now, when students and historians go back to study this period, the most consequential thing you have is the contemporaneous accounts, right? They're going to be going to the New York Times, they're going to be going to the Washington Post and Twitter and Facebook, and they're going to be seeing lies. And I don't know what we do about it.
I really like this fellow. I've had him on my shows a few times. Zuby, I'm sure you're familiar with Zuby. He put out, does great work. I mean, I'm like legitimately a fan of a lot of the stuff that he puts out. He wrote that a society that punishes people who tell the truth and rewards those who lie is not sustainable in the long term. I think that's where we are now as a culture. I think that people are punished for telling the truth and rewarded for telling lies. And that is not a bug. It is a feature. This is almost a desired status by those who are in positions of power to direct the conversation.
Yeah, and it's why I'm sympathetic to Peterson's position. And a friend of mine who I worked with at the Federalist, who's still there, John Davidson, is also banned from Twitter right now. He does honestly some of the best reporting from the border. He knows it. He lives there, and he's in the same boat. He won't delete it. I respect the choice. I think it's a hard choice. But yeah, as to Zuby's point, there's something to be said for I'm not going to lie. And if that means I can't tweet, I can't tweet. So,
I often talk about this. You remember I think it was in Solzhenitsyn's address to Harvard University where he said, live not by lies. And that was really the theme of the speech. And what we see increasingly is now we are a society where wokeness and therefore the Democrat id, the center of the Democrat party these days, demands that you live by lies, actually. You know, men are women are men, up is down, down is up. I mean, this is where we are, actually, as a society.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. And I think everyone does have to draw their lines. I think, you know, in the piece I mentioned, there's polling that shows that Americans are actually moving away from the idea that men can become women. There's been this shift in the direction of biological sex as determining gender. But that same poll shows that Americans really want to be nice to people, right? They want to be kind. They don't want to be jerks. I don't know, man. We might be getting to the point where we have to risk being a jerk every once in a while just to tell the truth.
I think that is where we are, by the way. And I do believe that the left actually exploits the innate kindness and decency of the American people on a regular basis to get through the agenda, essentially go along with this. Just be polite to people. Well, just be polite to people very quickly turns into celebrate drag queen story hour with, you know, five-year-olds having grown men dancing in their faces, you know, provocatively. Like, this is what ends up happening with just be polite to people. So I think people have had enough.
Or else you're a bigot.
Yeah, or else you're a bigot, exactly. David, always insightful, man. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, bud.
Comedian Samantha Bee used a recent monologue to incite pro-abortion activists to harass Supreme Court justices. We'll have the video for you in tonight's Quick Hits. Stay with us. Samantha Bee incites the mob against conservative Supreme Court justices, and Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of The Squad got an unpleasant reception at a recent concert in her home state. We have those stories and more in Quick Hits. Let's dive into it. Look, the libs are not handling the restoration of the Supreme Court to a deliberative body based upon constitutionalism instead of what they had, which is a left-wing super legislature that just decides what is best for people and then puts it from, drops it from on high like some edict from the heavens, or some people would suggest from another place given some of the outcomes. So that's what's going on here. And they're very upset. They're irrational. Their arguments don't hold up. Their arguments don't actually make much sense. Here is Samantha Bee, though, trying to use the comedy platform. She's a comedian. Aha. Comedy platform she has to call for the harassment of Justice Alito, for example. Why?
I can't describe how painful it is to be here now in a place where the Supreme Court has the power to erase 50 years of constitutional law. Make no mistake, this is not where it ends. Conservatives will not rest until they have come for all of our rights. Everything we have fought for could be lost unless we take it back. It's not just about voting in November. It's about doing everything in our power to protect and help vulnerable people access abortion across state lines. And we have to raise hell in our cities, in Washington, in every restaurant Justice Alito eats at for the rest of his life. Because if Republicans have made our lives hell, it's time to return the favor.
Harass Supreme Court justices. This is what she's saying. And I know if she's called out on that, she's like, oh, I was just kidding. Did she seem like she was kidding there? Didn't seem like she was kidding at all to me, but she's classless and unfunny and dumb on top of it all. Doesn't really know what the hell she's talking about, but that's pretty standard these days for the talking heads, the celebrities, and various entertainers and influencers who are weighing in on constitutional law. Do you think any of them have even read the Alito decision that overturned Roe? Do you think a single one of them even read the first page? No, of course not. They just have emotions and feelings, shouting, roar, yelling things. That's what they have. And then there are other libs out there who are concerned about American flags, apparently, and how they can trigger people. Watch.
On July 4th, me and my family were celebrating and shooting off fireworks, and a Jeep was coming down the street, so we had to get out of the street. And as the Jeep went by, it had two American flags flying high. And in the South, that typically means Trumplicans and Trump supporters and all that wonderful. But I looked at my neighbor and I asked her if she got a knot in her stomach when she saw the flag now. And she said, yes, she did. And I just attribute that to the insurrection. I attribute that to all the Proud Boy and white supremacist waving the flag high and just the Trump tards.
I mean, she's, oh, you just see her. You're like, she's just such a miserable cat lady. It's so obvious, you know, just so empty inside. I feel badly for her while it is also amusing to see somebody who is scared of the American flag. Ilhan Omar, far left-wing member of Congress, of the so-called squad as well. She didn't get the reception she was expecting at a concert in Minnesota over the weekend. Watch this one.
Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Please. No, please. Okay.
I don't even know why they are booing her, but somebody whose political positions deserve getting booed. So I guess at some level, but do we even know why were they booing her, guys? I don't even know. What was that all about? Just, oh, because she's just awful? Oh, okay. Well, you know, in that case, looks like Minnesota's waking up because she is awful. So there you go. Oh, good job, Minnesota. Maybe stop electing so many Democrats that ruin everything for everybody. Just an idea. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall on tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes. The families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.